Tantor Audio presents Razor's Ride by Jamie Begley. Narrated by Elizabeth Hart. Chapter 1. Beth pulled her little car into the vacant slot in front of the Buy Low Market. Grabbing her list and oversized purse, she glanced at her watch, calculating that she had an hour to finish shopping for Mrs. Langley. The frail old woman had hired Beth to do what tasks she was not able to do for herself any longer. She was one of many clients that Beth had accumulated over the last 5 years. She had even hired a college student part-time to do the chores she was not physically capable of completing. Cleaning out garages, heavy lifting, and lawn work were often requests that she once would have had to turn down. Since she had been able to hire Blake, those jobs were contracted out to him while still being able to make a small profit for herself. It didn't take long for Beth to complete the list. Frowning at the sparse list of groceries, she worried about Mrs. Langley's decreasing appetite. She knew it wasn't her finances that were responsible for the small list. Beth handled most of her finances, having earned an accounting degree in college. The extra task of balancing Mrs. Langley's checkbook took little of her time. It had actually made her feel better about using the neglected skills that her monthly student loan payment reminded her she had worked hard to earn. When she graduated, she had literally stumbled into her business when her next-door neighbor became ill. Beth had volunteered to run errands for her until she recovered. From there, word of mouth had created a clientele that had provided a steady income but left little free time. Her clients had started calling and asking for minor tasks to be completed that they were more than able to perform for themselves, often to fill the loneliness of their lives. Beth thought it was sad that they called her instead of their children, who often lived near, yet were unwilling to stop what they were doing to see to the parents who had raised them. Mailing her a check when she billed them provided a salve to their conscience. Beth was putting the groceries into the trunk of her car when the sound of loud motors filled the late afternoon air. Tensing, she looked over her shoulder and saw the large group of motorcycles pulling into the parking lot. The tiny town of Tree Point had a motorcycle club that had taken over the peaceful town 3 years ago. Slamming her trunk lid down, Beth quickly opened her car door and got in, closing and locking the door. As she put her keys in the ignition, she watched as the bikers parked closely together. The last riders were a motorcycle club, whose actual home location was unknown to the majority of the townspeople. Many believed it to be nestled in the mountains on the border between Kentucky and Virginia. When they got in trouble, as they often did, the two bordering police departments often foisted the crimes onto the other's precinct. Therefore, none of the crimes they were believed to have committed were ever prosecuted. They were growing larger and stronger in force, with both bordering communities becoming frightened of the intimidating strangers that lived and played hard. Fortunately, they stayed to themselves, and what trouble they got into stayed within their own cloistered group, as well as the unlucky bars they picked for the night. The after effects would often leave the bar closed days for repairs. Usually one of the members would show up the next day with a wad of cash for the owner, plus extra to silence them. It had become a regular source of income for the small business owners. Beth watched from her car as the large group walked into the store. The men were all dressed in jeans and leather jackets with their emblem on the back. Everyone in the small lot gave them a wide berth, not wanting trouble. Seeing others panic as she had made Beth feel guilty. They had not acted any different than any other shopper going into the small store. Several women were interspersed throughout the men. As one of the young women laughed, it drew Beth's attention. Mrs. Langley's granddaughter, Samantha, was walking with her hand through one of the larger men's belt. His arm was casually draped around her shoulders as he walked beside Samantha while talking to another biker, totally ignoring the scattering patrons. Sam was dressed as Beth had never seen her clothed before, and she had already developed a reputation before the bikers had made their presence known in town. She wore tight jeans that left her hips and stomach bare, with a glinting belly ring that drew attention to her flat stomach, along with a skimpy top, which left the globes of her breasts bare. Motorcycle boots completed the picture of a biker babe that Beth was sure would give her grandmother heart palpitations. Sam was several years younger than her, and at 19, her body was lithe and firm, unlike Beth's own short, chunky frame. Beth was not overweight, but because of her small 5-foot stature, the weight seemed to pack on no matter what she ate. Thankfully, her job and exercise kept her from being a pudgy mess. When they entered the store, Beth carefully pulled out of the lot. She was worried for the young girl. Though being well acquainted with Sam, she knew she would not appreciate any concern. Beth knew Mrs. Langley would be worried sick if she knew whom her granddaughter was hanging out with, while Sam's father would be furious. Vincent Bedford was president of the local bank. He was aloof and arrogant, saving his charming demeanor for the upper class of Tree Point society. Beth had talked to him when his mother-in-law had hired her, when Mrs. Langley had surprised Beth by asking her to keep up with her finances. Her son-in-law had agreed without a second thought. Vincent Bedford was not interested in what little his mother-in-law had. Instead, he kept busy kissing the ass of every rich and widowed woman in Tree Point. Beth turned on to the small lane that led to Mrs. Langley's house to drop off the few groceries she had requested. She was already planning ahead to the next assignment awaiting her attention. Hopefully, she would make it home before dark.
"Did you see that?" Razor asked the girl hanging on to his side.
"How could I miss it? She practically jumped into her car, she was so scared. I bet she pissed herself."
Razor laughed, and the others close by joined in, having also seen the luscious little blonde scurry to her car. Inside, they split up, gathering supplies for the coming week. Massive amounts of meat, chips, and beer filled the three carts to overflowing.
"How are we going to get all this back to the house?" Sam questioned Razor as he pulled out the large denomination bills to pay the exorbitant checkout ticket.
"Maybe we should hire your granny's scared little mouse to deliver them," he joked.
"Don't joke. I bet she ran right to my grandmother's to tattle on me. Nosy bitch."
Train walked up behind her, running his hand over her ass and pulling her close to his jutting crotch. They ignored the gawking customers and sales clerk, who were not used to such blatant sexual behavior in public.
"What you gonna tell, Sam, that you're fucking one of us? What you worried about? It's not the truth."
He snickered, pulling her even closer.
"Don't worry, Sam. It wouldn't occur to that old woman that you're fucking them all,"
Evie muttered snidely as she pushed her to the side with one of the overloaded grocery carts and moved toward the sliding doors.
"Put the groceries in my car," she directed the bikers, ignoring the angry glare directed her way from Samantha.
Sam turned bright red at the disrespect shown from the popular Evie. Feeling herself under scrutiny by the open-mouthed clerk, she snapped,
"What are you staring at, bitch?"
"That's the way, Sam."
Train eased his tight grip before dropping a kiss on her mouth, providing a show for the stunned people at the checkout. Angrily, Sam pulled herself away, stalking away from the audience that had formed in the busy store. Beth let herself into Mrs. Langley's house, juggling the groceries carefully. The large home was more than the older woman could handle anymore. The formal furniture and decorative ornaments required constant dusting. The gourmet kitchen had long lost its usefulness, with no one to cook for but herself. Quietly, she put them away before going in search of the older woman. She found her lying on her couch, taking a nap. "Mrs. Langley?" Beth was about to turn away and leave her to her nap when she heard a tired voice respond.
"Beth?"
"Yes, it's me." Beth moved further into the room so that she could be seen without making the woman rise from her reclining position.
"I thought you might be Samantha. She was supposed to stop by for a visit this week."
Sadness shone from her pale blue eyes. Beth felt a lump in her throat. So many of her clients suffered from loneliness. Feeling compelled to sit for several minutes, Beth listened to several anecdotes of Samantha as a child. As she listened, she found herself wishing to shake the girl in question for ignoring her grandmother. Yet she knew it was useless to feel anger about something that was beyond her control. She was simply following her father's example. Sam's mother had been Mrs. Langley's daughter and had died in a car accident when Sam was 14. Waiting until the woman wound down, Beth interrupted her between stories.
"I am sorry. I didn't mean to disturb your nap. I just wanted to let you know I dropped the groceries off and put them away. Blake will be by this weekend to clean out your gutters and store away anything you no longer need."
"Thank you. I don't know what I would do without your help."
"I am sure your family would be more than happy to help."
"You think so?"
"I know so. Now don't nap too long, or you'll be unable to sleep tonight. I'll see you Saturday. I'll lock the door on the way out."
Beth left her already dozing back off and was locking the heavy door when the loud sound of motorcycles again drew her attention. They were driving slowly down the speed-restricted lane, passing directly in front of the house Beth was leaving. Samantha was on the back of a large black motorcycle, holding tightly to a different biker than she had walked into the store with. Beth felt her eyes on her as she passed, and waved her hand in acknowledgement. Samantha turned her head in the other direction, blatantly ignoring the casual greeting. Beth shrugged to herself, not upset at the snub. Samantha had never been friendly when their paths had crossed, often being downright unfriendly. She had tried not to let it bother her. But Beth couldn't understand why the girl disliked her so much. The walk to her car seemed like a mile instead of the few feet it actually was. As she walked to her car, she glanced toward the bikes again as they passed. If it hadn't been so obvious, Beth would have gone back into the house until they were out of sight, but she was unwilling to make a fool of herself twice in the same day. She blew out a relieved breath as the last bike passed. That biker had been the one with his arm around Samantha at the store. He looked her way as she walked towards the car. The breath she'd been releasing caught in her throat at his rugged beauty. His dark brown hair reached the collar of his leather jacket and was tied back with a skull cap. Sunglasses hid the color of his eyes, although they didn't diminish the strength of his gaze on her. Feeling scorched as their eyes met briefly, Beth saw his lips twist into a wicked grin, as if he knew the feeling storming her body. She moved more quickly towards her car, tearing her eyes away from the passing motorcycle, and refused to turn when she heard him rev the bike's motor, as if he was laughing at her. Beth's fingers trembled as she fit her keys into the ignition. She didn't know why the bikers made her feel so uncomfortable. The only conclusion she had reached was that they incorporated every vice her father had warned against. Beth's parents had been born and raised in Tree Point. Her father had been the local Baptist preacher, and her mother devoted to his work. Their expectations of her had been high, and the community had kept their eyes on her, telling her father of each infraction that they felt, in their righteous way, was against his teachings. He had responded with hours of lectures and days of reproachful looks, making Beth feel often inadequate and bad. Experiences that young girls often enjoyed, such as dances and boyfriends, became associated with feelings that brought displeasure to her father. Beth had two choices when it came to the demands her father's position in the community commanded: either to rebel or to submit. Beth was no fighter. She had caved to her parents' demands because of her sister. It had not been hard caring for Lily. While Beth felt smothered by her parents' restrictions, Lily had embraced them. The rules had provided safety and structure to the traumatized girl. In showing an example of charity, her parents had adopted a little girl, Lily. Beth's mind shied away from the memories of her first meeting with the little girl, but she was truly thankful her parents had rescued the sister of her heart, if not blood. She was everything Beth was not: tall, slim, and radiantly beautiful, both inside and out. When you saw her, you could not take your eyes off her. It was as if you would miss something vitally important. To look at the pretty 19-year-old, you would never know the hell her parents had dragged her from. Lily had been tiny for her age, and her natural mother had skirted the law by never putting her in school. After adopting her, Beth's parents had told everyone she was actually 2 years younger, so she would not be so delayed in her own age group. Beth loved her sister. And when her parents had been killed when on a charity mission, Beth had moved home to care for her until she finished high school. Lily was now a senior with graduation a few months away. She had more than caught up developmentally and physically, but they had decided to keep her age unknown. It had been their parents' decision. The school knew her true age. It was the community that was kept in the dark, believing her to be 17. Beth pulled into her driveway, seeing the porch light on. Lily would be waiting for her to get home from work. The smell of food assailed her when she entered the cozy house. "Hi, sis. You're late," Lily greeted and accused her at the same time. "I know. I would have called, but I know how you are about me talking on the phone while driving." Beth removed her shoes and the band holding her hair tightly back from her face. Beth eased her sister's fears, understanding how traumatized she had been from their parents' unexpected deaths. "All right," Lily instantly forgave her sister. "Let's eat. I am starving." Beth laughed at her sister's slim figure. "You always are. I don't know why you can't gain weight the way you constantly eat. Must be good genes." Instantly, Beth regretted her words at the pain in her sister's eyes. Quickly taking her arm and leading Lily back into the kitchen, she changed the subject. "What's for dinner?" Laughing, Lily answered her question. "Your favorite, spaghetti." The girls set the table, and within minutes were sitting down to enjoy the dinner Lily had prepared. "So, what have you planned for this weekend?" "Nothing much," Lily shrugged, taking a slice of garlic bread. "Studying." Beth frowned at her short answer. "Isn't prom a few weeks away?" "Yes, but I'm not going." "Why? Doesn't Charles want to go?" Beth tried not to wince when she said his name. The young boy was nice. However, he showed many of the same characteristics of their father. His self-righteousness often grated on Beth's nerves. "No, and neither do I." Lily raised her hand when Beth would have protested.
You didn't go to your prom because Daddy wouldn't allow it. I just can't go when I know it wouldn't have been what he wanted. And Charles agrees.
Beth chose her words with care.
Lily, times have changed. The church is much more lenient than when Dad was pastor. I am not saying go out and get wild. Just go out and have a good time. There can be a happy medium.
Lily just shook her head.
No, Beth, please. I don't want to go.
Beth started to argue with her sister over whether it was the prom she did not want to attend or the after parties, which could get a little wild, when the phone interrupted her with the notes of Into the Fire. Lily made a look of reproach at the music, but Beth ignored it. She loved music and enjoyed it, contrary to her father's teachings of it leading to sin and temptation. Beth wasn't about to let Lily guilt her into changing it into her own boring ringtone.
Hello?
Beth, this is Loker James. I'm sorry to disturb your evening, but I have a situation on my hands I was hoping you could help me with.
No problem, Mr. James. What can I help you with?
Lily made a face at her as she helped herself to another serving of spaghetti.
I just received a call from Mick at Rosie's. Dad is down there, drunk, and trying to get in fights with other customers. I was hoping you could send Blake down there to take him home for me. I'm in Washington in a meeting, or I would do it myself.
I can't send Blake, but I can take care of it for you.
Mr. James' father, Tun, was a small man with a big name and an attitude to match. He was a sweet person when sober, but when he was drunk, he managed to convince himself that he was a badass. This often led to fights that he lost, and sometimes trips to the emergency room to be patched up under his son's furious recriminations. Loker James had hired Beth because his business had him out of town frequently, and he wanted to maintain a watchful eye on his father.
I don't know if that's the best option. Dad can be hard to handle when he's drunk.
The aggravation in his tone came clearly through the phone. Beth grinned. She was well aware of just how cranky the man could be, having put him to bed many times over the last few months since she had been hired. This, however, was the first time she would have to enter Rosie's to retrieve him after a binge.
I can handle Ton, don't worry. Mick will help me get him in the car.
She was well acquainted with Mick. The bar's owner had attended her father's church, and even continued when the new pastor had taken over at her father's death. Her father had wondered frequently to her mother if it was to repent for the sins he allowed to be committed within his establishment, or those he had committed himself. Whenever the subject had been brought up to Mick, he would just change the subject to her father's sermon, which redirected the enthusiastic pastor from his determination of saving the man considered to be one of the biggest sinners in the congregation. His large donations soon stopped further attempts at saving his soul.
If you're sure.
Doubt was now laced in his voice before Beth heard him sigh.
Call me when you have him back at home. If you run into any trouble, let me know immediately.
Chapter 2. It didn't take Beth long to reach the bar on the outskirts of the town after leaving Lily to do the dishes, which she didn't feel at all guilty about. That was the one chore Beth despised, spending her childhood doing them after the many dinners her parents had felt compelled to have for members of their congregation had completely turned her off from wanting to do them. Beth swallowed hard when she pulled in and saw the parking lot of Rosie's packed. Friday was a busy night for the bar, but the vast majority of spaces were filled with motorcycles. A sinking feeling hit her stomach. Before she could change her mind and call Loker James back to tell him that she couldn't rescue his father, Beth walked quickly to the entrance. As she neared the doorway, a movement to the side of the business drew her attention. A male was leaning against the side of the building, the darkened wall providing support, as a woman with a frilly black skirt was on her knees before him. Her bobbing head showed exactly what sexual act she was performing on the male, with his cock buried in her mouth. When Beth was able to lift her shocked eyes from the thrusting hips and large member being shoved into the woman's eager mouth, she recognized the man from earlier today as the one who had seen her scurrying to her car. Even now, Beth had to stop herself from running back to the safety of the waiting vehicle when he lifted his gaze and saw Beth staring at them in shocked surprise. He did not slow down. Instead, the hand in the woman's hair tightened as he pulled her closer onto him. He momentarily broke eye contact with Beth to watch his length disappear into the woman's obviously experienced mouth. Her black tube top was down around her waist, and his fingers were tugging on the woman's breast in his hand. Beth saw his fingers twist her nipple, and the woman began to squirm as her head bobbed faster, until Beth could tell from his lustful groan, as well as the woman's gasps, that he was coming in her mouth. When a slamming door jarred her back to reality, she walked jerkily forward, practically running into the bar. Beth despised herself for watching the couple, but she had been frozen in place, unable to move, with his eyes pinning her there. It took several seconds for her eyes to adjust to the dimness of the bar. Looking around, she saw Tun sitting at the bar, and it seemed she had arrived just in time. He was currently being held by the throat by another biker she had seen with Samantha, who was now sitting on the lap of a heavily tattooed biker earlier that day. Guessing fidelity did not exist among the group, Beth motioned to Mick, who had not taken his eyes off her since she had entered the bar. Carefully walking up behind Tun, who couldn't see her approach due to the biker now holding him dangling in the air, Beth reached out a hand and tugged at the arm determined to strangle the life out of her client.
"Excuse me, could you please let him go?"
The unbelievably scary face that turned to her forced an unintended squeak past her trembling lips. Beth knew she was a self-confessed coward, and wisely would have never in a million years attempted to confront the huge being in front of her in usual circumstances. This was definitely far from usual. She was being forced into the confrontation for her client's well-being and, of course, the huge amount she was planning on charging Loker James. Swallowing the huge lump of fear lodged in her throat, she reached out and tugged his hand away from a purple Tun. Released, Tun grabbed the bar, hanging on as he dragged air into his oxygen-deprived lungs. His gasps for air drawing everyone's attention as they waited to see if the old man would have a heart attack or recover.
"What the fuck?"
When the huge biker moved forward to grab Tun again, Beth moved, placing herself in front of Tun and thereby blocking his access.
"I apologize for anything and everything he has done. I am here to pick him up. If you would give me a minute, I will get him out of your hair."
Belatedly, Beth noticed the scary biker dude had no hair.
"I mean,"
hastily Beth spoke once again,
"I know he can be a little irritating when he has been drinking, and I won't let him bother you further."
The silence in the bar allowed Beth to hear her thundering heartbeat.
"He called me a pussy. I'm going to beat the shit out of him, then you can take him wherever the fuck you want to."
Again, he reached out to grab Tun, shoving her out of his way. As Beth grabbed a stool to regain her balance, she heard a harsh voice directed at the meathead.
"Back off, Knox. Let him go." You can settle the score later.
Beth turned to see the man from outside shoving the huge man.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?